Hey, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of the Life in Your Show podcast. I'm your host, Jason Wojo, and on the Life in Your Show, we help people make more, work less, and live amazing, abundant, prosperous, incredible lives. I'm joined by Polish Peter, my co-host. What's up, dude?
Hey, man. So we have some episode that we want to share with you that we're putting our secret vault, right?
Yes.
Because we have a secret vault. Do we have a secret vault?
A secret, highly protected vault.
Yeah. So it's basically you just jump into your hard drive and pull it out.
Right. What Peter is referring to is we're going to do a legacy episode. Now, occasionally we love to throw these in. We review our previous podcasts that were the most often listened to, the most often rated and reviewed and shared. And so these are the hot ones, the ones that people really, really enjoyed. And so we find these and we share them again for your benefit. Maybe you missed it the first time. Maybe you're a new listener or viewer and you didn't have a chance to listen to this. So this is a chance for you to get some of the gold nuggets that we have previously done so that you don't miss out. And so in this episode, we're going to share with you one of these episodes. We're going to call it a legacy episode. And I'm going to get ready to introduce it right now. And if you like this, I want you to give us a review, give us a rating, give us a thumbs up. Let us know what you can take from this and then even share it in our Life in Air Facebook group. Just go to Life in Air. If you search for Life in Air on Facebook, you'll find a private group there that you can be a part of. You don't have to be a Life in Air member. This is open to the general public. And I'd love for you to participate in there. Tell us what you thought of the episode. Let's jump into it right now. Here's our legacy episode. Enjoy. Hey, Dave, welcome to Life in Air Show, man. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
So I got to tell you, for those of you who are listening or watching, and don't forget, of course, we are on YouTube, and so you can check out the episodes there. Dave, you're a guy who you've had a tremendous amount of success in business, in not just real estate, in many different businesses, and you have your hands in a few different things now. But we were talking offline, and where I want this conversation to go, I'd like to let our listeners know about is like you've had a lot of business success, but you haven't always had that in balance with life. And you told me before you were a self-admitted kind of workaholic. But it wasn't until a little bit later that you realized you can have both and both the life and the business. And I think some people think you have to choose, like you can only have one, or maybe, one common thing we hear is like, hey, I'm going to make all this money first and I'm going to have a successful business first, and then I'll worry about life. So can you catch us up to speed on like what that was like for you? I know you made the transition out of full-time job into real estate investing. And it sounds like from what we were talking about before, you just kind of just worked all the time and had some unintended consequences of that workaholic attitude. What was that like? And walk us through that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I was always taught from a young age to work hard. If you work hard, you'll get rewarded. And it's funny because my first job, I remember I was sitting here thinking as you were talking, I remember my first job, I was a busboy, and my dad would, get on me about, hey, while you're there working, you work hard and you'll get rewarded and you'll get promoted and all this stuff. Well, I started getting requested by different waiters that they wanted me in their section because I was working harder and they would tip me better and things like that. And that just came to mind just a moment ago. So I think so that's how far back it was rooted, right? Mm-hmm. Work hard, work, a lot of hours, things like that. So transition that into my adult life. I'm married and, have a family and I'm working 60, 70 hours, 80 hours more times than I, want to admit. And, the consequence there was my marriage. My marriage fell apart. I mean, like I said to you before, I mean, from the outside looking in, it looked great. We had the big house, the nice car, the vacations. Everybody's like, oh, Dave, you've got the perfect life. And I did on the personal side, but I didn't because I was never there to enjoy it. I lost the relationship with my ex-wife and more importantly, my daughter. I mentioned this to you guys as well, she just wanted to spend time with me and I was never there. So, it was bad. I mean, I had a lot of success. I was doing very well, made good money, but I couldn't figure out how to balance the two. Yeah. Right. And it was very, they don't teach you this, And
so listen, so were you aware at that particular time, like when you were working 80, 90 hours a week, that you were doing the right thing, or was there a problem? Like, were you aware of that what it's costing and all that stuff? Or was it like, no, I'm doing this for my family and all that kind of stuff? Because that's a common denominator among a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a great question, Peter. I mean, to be honest, just looking back, I thought I was doing everything for my family, right? I remember having the conversation with my daughter years later. I did it for you and that kind of thing. And I wanted to give her a better life than I grew up having. And I could have done that and spent more time with her, and it would have been to her 100% better. So I think to answer your question, I felt like I was doing the right thing, but I always knew something just wasn't right. Right. I sensed that something wasn't right, that there had to be a better way to do this. And so that's where, that mind shift kind of, I think, started, the seeds were planted at around that time.
You know, man, I gotta tell you, you're a better person than me, because I used that reason when I was working really, really hard as well. But deep inside, I don't think I admitted it to myself back then, but looking back now at me, there was a part of it that was really doing it for myself as well. Like there was something inside of me that wanted to be successful. There was something that wanted, like there was a drive inside of me that I don't know if I had to prove it to myself, or like, hey, there was a certain number of dollar, income I wanted to make. And there was a part of it, like, yes, it was partially for my family. And I really, really did believe that. And by the way, I've done some great things because of the income I've generated for my family, but there was a part of it for me too, man, that I got, there was a significance part of it. Like I wanted to be successful and so for me, like, there was a little bit of selfishness, I don't know if you realize that about yourself too, or if it really truly was your family. That, man, that's awesome.
I think there's a level of truth there, in my story as well. I think that, I grew up very poor, inner city Detroit. My dad was disabled. My mom worked three jobs, the whole, scenario there. But I always told myself I'd never live like that. So I do think a part of it was for the family, hugely. Yeah. But I also think that there was some part, I wouldn't even say it was ego. I think it was just, I ran from that so hard, I didn't know when to stop. I didn't know it was okay to stop. I'm out of it, it was a great, we had fun, we had memories. I remember going to, cookouts and things like that. It wasn't a bad life. We were poor, but we didn't even know we were poor. I look back now and I'm like, oh my gosh, how did my mom and dad do it? But then it was just life. Everybody goes poor like that, right? It wasn't like we had rich friends it wasn't until high school that I realized, holy crap, we're poor. because everybody was poor. There's a level of truth there.
Yeah, it's amazing how much the environment plays a role, right? In how you're growing up and all that kind of stuff and how you experience life. And, you look at it, because I find it interesting, if you think about it, all three of us here on this call has some form of going like crazy, like 80, 90 hours a week, right? And there is a big cost. And I think all three of us have the same result as far as the cost goes, right? I got divorced. Yeah. Ojo's divorced. You got divorced, right?
Yeah.
So you got divorced. Is that when it kind of hit you, or what point did it like hit you? Like, what the heck?
I think that was the start of it. I think a lot of things were going on inside of me. I realized it's not that I didn't like the work. I didn't mind working 60 to 70 hours a week. And I think that was part of the problem, is it didn't bother me. But things were changing inside of me. I started to feel like there's gotta be a better way. That was the beginning of it. The divorce happened. Time later I met Becky and I'm like, wow, this is like another gift from God. And I didn't want to mess that up. But I didn't know what to do or how to do it, and that was tough. Because I knew something had to change. I just didn't know how to change it. I've always been resourceful. I've always been able to figure things out. And I've always been able to, seek out the right people that I could get the answers from. And I did not know where to turn.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, like, in your case, dude, I love what you said about, you know, you're running away, but you just didn't realize, like, the race was kind of, you already, you know, you kept running, right? Yeah. For, like, run, Forrest, run. And, like, and so, exactly. And you just, you passed the finish line. And it's interesting, I think, because people come up from a number of different backgrounds, and they all kind of, at some point, I think, converge upon this ideal of working really hard. So either you come from poverty and you see the effects of that poverty and you're like, I'm not going to continue in this. I'm not going to let my kids experience this. I'm going to get away from this. And so I'm going to work my way out of it.
Yep.
Or you have people that have come from kind of some degree of wealth, and they want to hold on to that so tightly that they don't want to lose it. They'll also, sometimes, you know, pursue that. And with the encouragement of, like, you know, I've kind of been brought up the same way, where it was like, you know, you work hard. And you know, you're kind of, you know, you take advantage of the gifts that were given to you, and you, and you're wasting your talents if you don't work hard. Yeah. And so, like, many people, I think, find themselves in this boat. Unfortunately, I also feel that most people, I don't know if they don't realize something's wrong, or if they ignore it, or if they are, like you said about being around other people, right? And not knowing anything. Like, when you were younger, you didn't know any different. You didn't know you're poor. Right. Well, everybody else is around people that are, everybody else is working hard too. And everybody else is working long hours too. So you just think, like, I don't know, maybe this is the way it's supposed to be. And so I think people kind of really struggle with that, or haven't taken the time to reflect on really, like, you know, is this really moving in the direction that I want it to, like, in every area, not just work. And so tell us, like, what it was like. So you made this realization, and so you meet Becky, and you're like, okay, something has to change. I'm not exactly sure what, like, what, how did you start to make that realization? Well, it sounds like you started to have the realization, but you didn't know what to do.
Correct. Yeah. So, I was doing some searching, and I started getting back really into the investing. I mean, I've always been an investor, but I really started
real estate investing. We're talking about.
Yes. Okay. I really tried to start turning it up right about that time. I went from flipping one or two homes a year. I was trying to really transition out of the job. But again, I didn't have a plan. It was just all, you know, if I throw enough into the funnel, you know, the end result's going to be success. But again, going back to when I met Becky, I just knew something was different. You know, I really felt like very blessed to have a relationship with somebody like her. And I didn't want to mess that up. And so I'm searching and how do I not? And it became a conflict with my work, because I had the work lifestyle of a 60, 70 hour week. And now I'm trying to spend more time with Becky in this, you know, new relationship. And it was conflicting, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not working when I should, and, you know, and I'm working when I shouldn't be, you know, those kind of things. So it was really, for me, becoming an issue.
Now, when you say you're searching, were you searching for ways to work less? Well, like, you were looking at the strategy and the tactics of business and trying to figure out how to run your business in less hours? Or are you referring to, like, searching internally for, like, struggling, like, I'm searching my soul for, like, what's most important to me? Or, like, what do you mean when you say you're searching?
I was searching for the answers. I was looking for the magic potion, you know, take this pill and everything's going to be fine. Right. Which of course doesn't exist. Right.
Can you repeat that?
Also, what's that?
Can you repeat that again?
I said, doesn't
magic
exist.
Magic potion, what? Doesn't exist?
It doesn't exist, yeah. And it's true. I mean, I was looking for that fix-all. You know, you just do this and everything is going to be fine. But I was also very conflicted internally, because I liked my job, and I was afraid that if I didn't work those hours, I wasn't going to have the success. It was right about that time I had gone to the RIA, and
let me interrupt you. RIA, for those who are non-real estate people, is Real Estate Investors Association.
Correct. So I went to the RIA and I met a Lifeineer, there, and they invited me to a retreat, not even a 3-day. I had no idea what I was going into, but they said, "Hey, come check this, you know, mastermind out, and you know, I think you would like it, and I think you'd be a really good fit." And so Becky and I decided to go. It was down in, I think it was Jacksonville, Florida. And I remember, you know, Becky's like, "I don't know these people. I'm not saying a word." And, you know, I'm like, "That's fine. We're just going to be here to listen." Jason, it was not even through the first day. I'm like, I found my answer. And it was like a total peace that came over me. It was pretty cool. And it was people showing me that, like, I didn't have a plan, but it's possible to have that plan. You know what I mean? And so it's funny because Chuck came over to me afterwards, after the 3 days, and he said, "So what do you think?" I'm like, "I'm in." He's like, "Well, that's good to hear." He goes, "Don't you want to know what, you know, what it costs, what it's about?" I'm like, "I don't even care. I'm in." And it was from that day that I started formulating my vision in my head, right? And Chuck was my coach. And man, he would be on me all the time. "Dave, you know, send me your vision so we can start working on it." I'm like, "Chuck, I got my vision up here. You know, I don't need to put it on paper. I've got the plan now," right? Which wasn't true, of course. Right?
I thought right, I right.
Yeah, you know, it's off my head. It was starting, right? It was formulating, and I was getting a lot of clarity at that time. Life Veneer, it's funny because Life Veneer, I always tell my students this, Life Veneer is not that magic pill. It's not that magic potion, right? You're still going to do all the work. What we're going to help you do is to find clarity in it and prioritize things and develop a plan. And that's what I was starting to do in my head. But for the first time, I really saw the fact that, wait a second, you know, I've been so successful investing in real estate, but I've never done anything with it. And what I mean by that is, like, if I made 20 grand, I spent 20 grand. You know, if I, you know, I didn't have any debt when Becky and I got together, but I also didn't have any money. I let my ex-wife have everything pretty much. I gave her the retirement funds. I wanted out, and I figured I could make it again. And afterwards, I kind of thought, wow, that was the craziest thing you could have ever done. But I'm kind of glad that that happened like that, because I've been able to prove to myself that money comes, money goes. And it, what it did for me is it took the importance of money off the table, right? Don't get me wrong. I like to make money. I really like to make money, but it's more, it kind of put money in its place.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
We'll get right back to our episode, but before we do, I want to tell you about an upcoming Get a Life getaway that we have in beautiful, beautiful Orlando, Florida, and it's November 7th through 9th. November 7th through 9th in Orlando. And you're going to want to be there because Peter and I are going to walk you through the exact steps to creating a life in your vision for your perfect life. This is a perfect illustration of how all of the pieces of your life will fit together to give you a life full of meaning, of fulfillment, of passion, so that you can really move forward in all cylinders and wake up excited every day for what you get to do versus what most people have to do, which is what they have to do, right? We don't want that for you. I want you to have a complete picture, a blueprint for your perfect life. And then we're also going to give you the action steps, how to make it a reality. This is not a pie in the sky approach to living. It is not burying our head in the sand and saying we have a great life, but it is not. This is really concrete strategies. This is very tactical advice. It's things that are that you can actually implement in your life and move forward towards. We've been doing these events for a very, very long time. We help a lot of people, and I want you to be next. So again, those dates are November 7th through 9th in beautiful Orlando. There's a link below in the show notes, or go to lifeneer.com where you'll see the list of upcoming events. Click on it, register, and I hope to see you there. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, so listen, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Sorry, because I think some of the listeners who are listening to the podcast are non-lifeners, right? They find us somewhere on the internet. And a couple of things that I heard you say, you had this kind of like an aha moment, right? At the end of those 3 days, and you said, "I'm in." So you saw something different. Two, you talked about how the money plays a different role. And and the business side, whatever. Can you clarify, like speaking to someone who has nothing, doesn't know anything about life on air, what is that epiphany that kind of at the end of 3 days, like, wow, I'm in. What made you say that?
Well, because I went to the retreat, and I think I would have had the same response at a 3 day, of course, but they weren't doing 3 days, mm-hmm. you know, that frequently. And this was T2, right? So this was like the second group within Life and Ear. The epiphany was I saw people who had a vision for their life, not just business. I always set goals. I mean, I'd set goals in January like everybody did. You know, hey, I want to do this. I want to lose 10 pounds. I want to buy a new car. I want to do this. And I would always, always hit those things. I'd hit them in January, or in June or July. So now I went from August to January, and I was just coasting, right? I hit my goals for the year. It's done. I didn't think far enough ahead to say, hey, my vision is a life one, right? And I'm always, every month, every week, working towards achieving that. So back to the epiphany, I'm sitting around this room and I'm hearing people compare their success from the last retreat to this one against their vision. And it just become just so like a light went on, so obvious that was the missing link in my life. That was my roadmap. I'm driving around the country aimlessly trying to get somewhere that I didn't even know where I was going, right? So that just so motivated me. Like I literally came home from the retreat, and before the next retreat, I had already quit working full time. I had gone from working 60, 70 hours down to like maybe 10 or 15. I was just finishing stuff up. At the time I was a real estate agent, I was selling $3 to $5 million a year, and I was done, you know. I wanted to spend time with Becky. I mean, it was just a mix of things. But I don't know if I answered that question, Peter, or not. You know, I'll kind of explain that epiphany or not. But it was just, it just become really obvious that I didn't have a plan, right?
So, Dave, I'm curious, like, you know, you said something pretty astronomical there. Like, you went from working all those hours down to a fraction of that. And I'm wondering, like, how, first of all, you know, I got to tell you, we've seen people try that to go cold turkey from that kind of difference. And sometimes people go through withdrawals and people like, they haven't set up their businesses or the right way, and they crash and burn actually. And so, I'm actually surprised to hear that you were successful from that in that quick of a period of time. Usually we see it a little bit more scaled back, but For people who want to make that change, like, okay, so let's establish the first step is to really figure out what that vision is. But then, what do people, how do you actually do that? What are the struggles you faced, and how do people do that, man? Like, how do people, how can people make this change?
I'll tell you, I may have mentioned this to you before. My friends and family thought I was an idiot. They're like, what are you doing?
And they don't know.
Well, for different reasons now, Peter.
For different reasons, right.
In their eyes, you know, I had reached this level of success. I was making really good money. I mean, they didn't know how much, but they knew I made really good money. To leave the lifestyle I had with my ex-wife to where I was at, they just thought, like, you know, that I was in a cult. You know, like, why would you quit this great job? And I'm like trying to explain my vision. And of course I'm new at this, so I couldn't explain it at all. I'm like, I got this vision. I got a plan, man. And they're like, oh, man, you're crazy. Why would you just, you know, walk away from that kind of money?
And, so hold on a second. So you didn't, I want to make sure people are listening to this. So when you dropped those hours, you also were okay with letting go of that income, or you tried to maintain the income?
I didn't care anymore. I was ready to start fresh. I knew, I kind of saw like a bell curve, right? I knew that I was going to probably take a hit for a while. Mm-hmm. Luckily for me at the time, I was debt free. So that made it a little bit easier. I had some debt, but very, very little, very manageable debt. I didn't care at that point. I kind of just jumped off the cliff and hoped that I had a parachute on my back. Oddly enough, though, because I started to, all these mindset shifts were happening at the same time, right? I ended up actually that year making as much in real estate than I did the year previous. Now, some of it was because there was stuff in the pipeline. I mean, let's be honest, right? It wasn't like, oh, you quit your job and money just comes from nowhere. It's not that. But it gave me the opportunity that I had some commission saved up. I had some in the pipeline closings that were going to happen. So I just didn't go in and prospect anymore. I wasn't sitting in the office. I wasn't going out on appointments with buyers. I was just, I was very, very, very selective on the hours I worked. Partly because I wanted to be home with Becky, and at that time, Becky had, one of the things that came out of the 3-day retreat that we went to was that she was going to leave her job. She had been working for almost a year, and we hadn't even spent any of her checks, right? We put the money in the bank, but we didn't touch it. We didn't need it to live on because I was making really good money. So in the retreat, she broke down crying about how much stress she had. She was working, 40 plus hours a week, then coming home and being, soccer mom and take care of the kids and, do homework and then cook dinner and take care of the house. And then at 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, we would sit down and do business, right? And so we'd work till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning doing business. And then she'd go to bed and get up at 5 a.m. and start all this over. She was just a trooper and just did it. She never complained once. And I felt so bad at the retreat because I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing this to her. Right.
What a bad husband.
Right. Well, we weren't even married at the time. So yeah, what a bad boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, it's funny because Chuck, come over to me on one of the breaks. He's like, dude, you know what you got to do, right? And I slid a notebook over to him, and I had written on there, Becky quits her job when we get home. And he looked at it, he goes, you're a smart man. Because, we didn't need the money, and I was just breaking her down, and I didn't want that. So she quit. She's home. Life of a realtor, right? If you don't have appointments until 3 or 4, why go to the office? I just hang out with my best friend, right? So that kind of helped with the transition into that. But I think kind of going back, I think to maybe answer your question some more, part of it was our financial situation. I'd worked hard. I was a big Dave Ramsey fan. I'd done the snowball effect and got out of debt. I did have some debt, but it was minor. I'm talking 10 grand in debt. I didn't have a house anymore. I was renting, and it was a little easier that way because I didn't have to make, $6,000 a month in order to live.
Right. Right. Okay. So you set yourself up, like we talk about in life, and are setting yourself up to win. And so you set yourself up in a position where you could make that shift. And even if income was compromised, due to the decrease in work hours, you were able to weather that storm. And it also sounds like, and let me ask you this, Dave, do you think, can somebody, and I guess this is a little bit of a loaded question, but like, do you think is it possible for someone to work 15 or 20 hours a week and make the same amount of money as someone who's working 60? Or if not, is that okay? I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that because, I've been doing that for years now. You and I kind of talked about this once before. I try to work as little as possible, but to see how much money I can make, right? And it's kind of a little game.
So it's not laziness. It's you have a vision, and actually in your case you're like, hey, I want to figure out and in fact it's actually probably to some extent more challenging for you to make the same amount of money in 20 hours than it is in 60 because you have to be more creative, you have to be more intentional, you have to be more resourceful. So there's hope for people. Listen, if you're listening right now, you can make the money you want and not have to, sacrifice everything in the process. And so, okay, so you set yourself up to win, you drop the hours. What are some of the things that you did differently as a person? What are some of the things that were different in your business that are tips maybe for people that people can take away from this and for themselves to start looking at in their lives?
Right. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I think the biggest thing, if you can take one thing away from this call today, I would say, get out of your own way. Get out of your own way. And what I mean by that is I used to think that nobody could do what I do as well as I do it, right? I had to have my hand in everything. And it actually came out in one of our retreats that I was a control freak. Well, Joe, I tell you that totally put me in a head spin.
I am not a control freak.
I always looked at control freaks as being like a negative thing and bad people. And it was like someone smacked me in the face with it. And I had to admit that they were right. They're like, dude, you're a control freak. And I'm like, holy crap, you're right. You know? And it that bothered me. I promise you for 2 weeks that I haunted me. And I'm like, okay, how do we change this? Right. So I started delegating stuff off and I quickly realized like, this is kind of cool. I got 4 things done, you know, in what would have taken me to do one of those. Right. I started looking at my business once I started delegating some stuff. And coincidentally, I realized, I said earlier, like nobody could do what I do as well as I do. I realized not only could they do it as well as I did it, in a lot of cases, they were doing things better than me, right? Because a lot of those tasks were, you know, analytical tasks, stuff. I'm not an analytical guy. You know, I had to learn my role. And for me, my role was the visionary. I want to stand up on top of the building, looking down and it's putting people in places. Hey, you three, go over there and do this. You two, do this. You guys, work on that. And so once I started delegating and realized that, oh, wow, this is pretty cool, I quickly realized that I need to take and look at my business. And so I process mapped my whole business out, everything I do. And then I started, like, I literally took a highlighter, started highlighting stuff. Hey, this is an area that I can delegate. This is an area. Well, Joe, I was doing so many $10 an hour jobs. It was ridiculous. You know?
Dude, so let's unpack that a little bit more. I love that idea, the process map. So tell us more about, so you basically broke down every different part of your business, every different responsibility, every different role, is that every different action component. And then you kind of looked at these from the perspective of what was your criteria on figuring out what you wanted to delegate? Was it simply hourly rate, or was it like what you like or don't like, or what are some of the things or decisions you used to?
Yeah, the deciding factor was when I took the red marker and started circling the things that made money. What made me money, right?
Made you money.
You know, going mowing a lawn didn't make me money. It might have saved me $25, but it didn't make me money. You know, I made money when I went to a closing, right? So how do I get to a closing? I got to buy a house. Circle that one, right? How do I get to buy a house? I got to do the phone calls, right? So I circled the 4 or 5 things that in my business that made me money. And that's the stuff I focused on, right? And so once I started doing that, I didn't have to worry. I could make 50 phone calls in a couple of hours and I'm done for the day. Oh, wait, I got an appointment at 3 o'clock today. Then I'm done, right? It became very easy to, I had my vision and now I had this process map and it was very easy. And I thought originally like, okay, well, I'm going to delegate all these $10 an hour jobs off. How am I going to pay people for this? Right. Or where's the money going to come from? I was really surprised. I offered a lot of people percentages of my profit. So now I have people working for me for free to get a percent of the deals. And I'm talking 10%. 15%. They basically got paid, but I didn't pay them until I made money, you know, and it worked out well. In a lot of cases, they got overpaid, but it got me to my goal. And then I started looking at streamlining stuff. How am I, you know, how can I automate some of this stuff? How can I use technology? How can I use, you know, virtual assistants, things like that. And, you know, literally there's been weeks where I don't work at all. And then there's weeks where I work 10, 15 hours a week. And the neat thing is that my best year working 80 hours or 70 hours a week, I've doubled that in income now. So it's really cool to be in a place. And now, you know, fast forward a year from when I started this transition, you know, back 5-6 years ago, my friends and family would be like, what do you do for a living? You know, you're never working. I see on Facebook, you're, you know, walking in the park, or you're riding a canoe, or, you know, you're on vacation. And I refer them back. I'm like, hey, remember when I was crazy and I quit that job? You know, my plan worked out. I was very blessed. It's funny because I think that, you know, as I said earlier, Life Veneer doesn't give you that magic potion, that magic pill. But what I discovered and learned from Life Veneer was that vision. That vision was so important. I touched on this a little bit. Yeah, Chuck would always be on me. It took me almost a year to actually put my vision in writing with Chuck and then Becky both chirping at me, right? But once I wrote it, I think it was about 18 months we were living it. And I'm like, holy crap. And when I wrote the vision, I'm like, all right, Chuck, you want a vision? I'll give you a vision, right? You and Becky teaming up on me. I wrote this ridiculous vision out. And like a year later, I'm living that, 18 months or something like that. I'm living. I'm like, holy crap, this shit works. You know, it was amazing.
Did it take you a year because you were reluctant and you didn't think you needed it, or because it was difficult for you? You didn't know what you want. Like what took you so long to do that? Was it just a,
I think part of it was in my head, so I knew it. And I think, honestly, just thinking back, I think part of it might have been I was a little bit afraid that what if it didn't work? If I put it in writing, now I can fail. If it's in my head, I can change the plays around. You know,
right, no one will know, right? Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I really think that part of it might have been that I was a little bit afraid to fail at it. And so once they kind of tick me off to the point where I'm like, all right, I'll give you a vision. I wrote this. I mean, it was ridiculous. I would have been happy if that was the end. Right. But it wasn't.
And so is this thing still evolving for you? I remember the last thing we talked about, I think last retreat I saw you at, you and Becky were talking about some of your international missions ambitions.
Yeah.
Tell people, like, and just give people a scale, just tell people what that's all about. And so people can understand some of the scale of what you guys have put this down as being important.
Yeah. Well, for the Life Veneers that are in, you know, listening to the call or watching the video, I'd like to just add one thing. So after I achieved my vision, I was lost. Like, you know, what do you do now? You're living this life that you put out there. Like, this would be the very best life I could have. Now what? You achieved it. You know, as humans, we want what's next, right? You want to feel like you're growing. And so I literally went 6 months, like just in almost like a slump or a depression, because I didn't know what to do. I mean, I've achieved the best life I wrote for myself. And it wasn't until I had a call with Chuck and he's like, you really don't know what to do next. And I'm like, Chuck, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know if I should quit Life Veneer. I don't know if I should, you know. He's like, you write another vision. I'm like, that's a great idea, right? So for those of you who get to the point where you're living your vision, write another vision. I'm giving you the answer now. Don't go through 6 months of agony. So I'm on my third vision right now. It's our plan is, Corey's a senior going into the new school year. When he graduates, our plan is to spend 6 months of the year in some country, Costa Rica, Mexico, the Philippines, wherever. I'd like to, when we come home for the 6 months, to go somewhere neat, like within the U.S., go live in New York City or, you know, Florida, California, Denver. I think that would be really cool. I don't think we'll sell the house because I don't think we'll do this forever. Ideally I'd like to find a place that I would like to go, maybe buy a house somewhere, you know.
And is there any work involved here? Are you still running your business, or are all of your assets providing your income now? Like, how are you going to fund that, man?
Funded through our businesses. Okay. I've got my businesses streamlined to where they pretty much run themselves. You know, like the crate company, I've got really good partners. One of them does a pretty significant role in the company, and she gets paid for that, but that allows me not to have to work at all. I worked there 3 weeks ago, maybe, for the first time in like 2 years, and I worked for 2 hours. It was kind of cool to be back in there and, you know, reminiscing on how we built that company up. It was kind of fun. The rentals, of course, will be a huge part of that. I would love to still be coaching, you know, coaching the students and coming back for retreats and things like that. But this is a plan that's been in the making for at least 5 years. And we're getting really, really close. Last year, we did spend a month and a half in Mexico on vacation, and that was really cool. And, you know, it's funny, you know, my goals this year was to spend 12 weeks on vacation with COVID, and that I don't think we're going to reach that goal. But it's nice to be able to work and change people's lives and help people, you know, because we're buying motivated sellers' homes. You know, they got a problem, we try to go in and find a solution that really works for them, not just me. And so it's cool to be able to do that, but also to be able to live my life. You know, I've got a couple grandkids now, and a niece that spends a lot of time at our house, you know, so it's fun to be spending time with them and with Becky and just hanging out. I mean, it's life, I live a life that I never thought was possible.
All right. So listen, I got a question for you. What's the, someone who is listening to this call and they're working 80, 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a week, what's the last piece of advice that you have for them to tie up this awesome podcast?
I would say write a vision. Write a vision and get some accountability and living it. I mean, we didn't talk much about accountability, but I had a lot of accountability partners, my coaches and things like that along the way that helped me. You know, it's not like, oh, I wrote this vision and boom, it happened, right? It was a lot of hard work, you know, a lot of discipline that I had to learn. And what I mean by that is, you know, we were flipping houses. And to get these big checks, I always just went out and had good times. You know, now I got to save these checks because my plan was to flip two or three homes and buy a house with cash. And so you're sitting on, you know, a $35,000 check after you just got two closings in real estate and made another 10 grand, you know, you want to go out and do something. You want to buy a, you know, a new car, you know, so it's hard to stay disciplined and follow the plan. So that's where my accountability partners, my coaches really came in and helped. You know, to help Dave remind you of your, of, you know, does that fit your vision? Does that new car fit your vision? It took me 3 years to buy my new car because every time I get the money, I'm like, oh man, I could go spend, you know, 30 grand on a used car, or I could buy another house. Right. So it's definitely a mind shift. So I would say that to answer your question, Peter, I would say write a vision and get accountability. And if you're in Life Veneer, take advantage of your coaches, of your accountability peers and things like that. If you're not, there's a little plug here, but I would say look into it. I mean, Life Veneer is great for that. You're around like-minded people. You've got people encouraging. I've never once in the 7+ years in Life Veneer seen somebody talk about a success and somebody hate on them. I've never seen that. They're like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. And they're trying to pump you to that next level. And I love that. That's what I love, you know, I think most about the group.
Well, dude, I really want to appreciate, show my appreciation for you joining us, and also for taking this step towards this life, because you, whether you realize it or not, you become kind of an inspiration for other people of what's possible, you know, going from all those hours to working so little and to traveling and to pouring into people and to helping others. And really, I think it's just awesome that you've been able to do that. And I just want to thank you for sharing with us, man. And so, hey man, thanks for joining us. It's been a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Wojo.
Hey, that's a wrap for the episode. Hope you enjoyed it. You know, we'll drop these occasionally, but frankly, You know, this is something that we're just going to be do for a special treat once in a while. If you did enjoy it, if you loved it, if you really think there's some value here and some nuggets you can move forward with, leave us a review. I said this in the intro. Let us know what you learned from it. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Leave us a rating. Give us a thumbs up. Tell other people about the show, because this is how we can change the world. We can change the community around us, and we can shed a light into other people's lives to help them live the vision that they also are pursuing, so they can live success to their own definitions. We'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.